What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
When you download the Kroger app, you have easy access to savings every day. Get the most out of weekly sales and receive personalized coupons toward your favorite items, all while earning one fuel point for every dollar spent. Because shopping at Kroger, whether in-store or online, is easy. And saving money is even easier with the Kroger app. So get the most value out of every trip, every time. Download the Kroger app now to save big. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Must have a digital account to redeem offers. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
Forever Dog.
I just saw that in the like latest episode of Moon Knight, there's a couple instances of people speaking Mandarin, and somebody had a TikTok that was just like, there, it's nonsense. Like, it's not the captions come up as speaking Mandarin, but then like apparently it is just a series of sounds. Like,
are you serious?
Oh, really? It's that bad?
Yeah, like they were like it's not even. I don't know. Like, I didn't. I was just reading the like
the actors were just saying random words. Like, not
there's
even.
No way.
The actors were doing.
That's so funny.
I didn't watch the whole video, but I stopped at the person being like, the person said something like, and frankly, it's not even worth, like, and I don't, and so I don't know if they go into it more detail, that's to being like, it is kind of blah, 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 or like the pronunciation is just off, but they were like, whatever it is.
Probably Google translated it. Like, I bet it doesn't make sense, but it's worked. It's like when I used to be in choir, and I am a triple threat, thank you. And I would like not, I wouldn't know the harmony, or I wouldn't know the whole thing, but I would just be like, ooh, ah, ooh. Like, I don't know what's doing here, but as long as you move your mouth, it looks like you're saying words.
Right.
It's funny that, like, you can have the internet, which can check people constantly, but also, I don't know who to trust on the internet either. So it's like, was that TikToker correct? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, that person could just be ranting. And
there,
like,
there were a few, like, they referenced other, like, people's tweets about it as well. Like, people were also like, woof. Like, I think, like, Shang-Chi, Simu was like, they need a new, they need a new person to, whoever taught them their Mandarin was wrong. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Marvel going at Marvel.
Yeah, 100%, because I've been in situations, like, me and my sister did a commercial in China where, I mean, I don't, like, they, like, the whole casting happened here where nobody checked our Chinese. Like, we do speak Chinese, but, like, we're probably not the best people. Like, it worked out because they're like, who could actually sort of speak Chinese and then also act? But that's just to give you an idea of how, like, they don't know how to find people who speak Chinese. And there's so many people who speak Chinese, and it really is wild. I literally...
Yeah, roughly 1.4 billion of them.
I will say, I will spill a little tea, because I feel like lately there have been a lot of, like, you know, these sort of kids animated and things like that where they want Chinese speakers. So I get sent a lot of them, and I won't name many of them, but they literally will send me an English script and be like, but do it in Mandarin. So, like, I have to write
it. So they don't even translate it.
Yeah,
they don't even,
which is ridiculous.
Wow.
It's like literally forcing you to do work.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's truly, it's like, oh, pay me first and then, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, come on. Exactly. Pay me first.
They're probably learning how to say it depending on, like, how many people say it in the same accent.
You're just making me think about all these commercial auditions that are making us do all these crazy things. And I'm like, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of having to film a short film every time I audition for something. I'm tired of, like, the multiple angles and, like, the different... And, like, now they're just like, because they're not there, they're like, hey, just do... here's five scripts and do two takes for each one. And then also there's two different roles. So maybe do two takes for each role. Like, come on. Like, I can't be everywhere, everything all at once.
They're like, can you give us an idea of how you would light this scene if you were the DP?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what, you want me to be everything everywhere all at once, you know?
You do realize we heard you say it before, right? And we kind of like, we all kind of ignored
it. So what's happening right now, Teresa, is Bray is trying to transition into the official start of the podcast.
Well,
by saying...
I did catch this in your Kimmy episode, and it was quite entertaining to skip over his attempts.
I wasn't attempting anything. I was more just doing a rant about the, you know, casting industry that's trying to make actors, you know, everything everywhere.
Don't do it
all at once.
Could you say that in Chinese? No,
all right, let's start the show.
Jonathan Braylock, James the Third, Drum Milligan.
What more can I say?
You know what it is.
Black men can jump.
Black actors, man.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City.
We picked you because you're literally the worst version of yourself. You're living your worst life.
That line was crazy.
I loved that. I thought that was so cool.
Because he said it so heartfelt and seriously.
I mean, honestly, that's real. That's so real.
Yeah. I was inspired, though, because it really... I've been on this singularity shit. I have too many thoughts. James and I have talked about singularity a lot, and I never thought the movie that would hit all the serotonin levels of singularity was going to be also starring Michelle Yeoh. So this is cool.
Let me tell you, I had no idea going into this movie what it was about. I hadn't seen a single trailer. I had no idea.
All I knew was people really liked it. But for those of you who are listening for the first time, this voice that sounds like
Choppy,
the guide who could take you safely through multiple universes.
This boy sound like a snitch.
And make sure that you don't die. That voice is Jonathan Braylock.
Yeah, that voice that you definitely don't want in your ear guiding you nowhere is Jonathan Braylock.
What is being a snitch have anything to do with?
I don't know, Bray, but you ain't guiding nobody nowhere, okay? This voice that has all the excitement and love, is that a Gerard Milligan?
Love? You started with hate.
Hands down, my favorite part of the entire podcast now.
Don't know why I remember
Gerard
that.
Quietly shading Bray throughout his introduction.
Wow. Gerard just pulled my favorite Will part. Smith calling me Whoa. A snitch and then being like, I'm an agent Whoa. For a block.
All right, well, this voice is James the Third. I'm just going to get that, just going to throw that in there really quickly, this voice.
All right, well, we also have a really special guest.
Special guest?
With us in the studio today. God, wow. An incredible comedian, stand-up actress. Please welcome Teresa Lee. Hello.
What's up? This is the voice of your mother. I don't know. I can hear my mom's voice. I mean, this movie is all about moms and Asian moms, and it really was triggering. So, you know, the whole day I've just been hearing my mom's voice in my head.
We had Turning Red, which was also about...
This might be the second movie. Yeah, Turning Red. Yeah.
Asian moms, and yeah. Now we got Everything Everywhere All at Once.
And that was like 2 weeks ago.
I have a humble brag that is not really a brag, but is like a thing. It relates, it folds into the theme of the movie of everything mattering, not in linear, but Harry Shum Jr. is in this movie. And during the pandemic, like it was one of those things where he was just trying to meet with, you know, supporting Asian actors. So we did like a general and I was prepping a short that I didn't end up shooting, but about my mom and was like a mom and a daughter in Taiwan and very similar thematics of the mom-daughter relationship because, you know, I mean, at some point you're going to be like, everybody has this in Asian culture. But I got to say, I think he read mine and then read this. So in this timeline that we're in, I planted a seed of a theme and then maybe I helped him say yes. You don't know. I mean, I feel like I definitely, you know, I planted a seed there.
No one can prove otherwise.
Yeah. No one can prove that is not the case.
So, yeah.
No one can prove that is not the case.
We are a film review podcast and we review the films of leading actors of color. We talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood. We are reviewing Everything Everywhere All at Once today. It came out wide release this past weekend. Of course, you're listening to this in the future, but so far it's $8 million at the box office, but it has a strong word of mouth. So I'm sure it's going to keep trucking along here.
Yeah.
It has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, 94%
Hell yeah.
audience score. So those are very, very close. And obviously it stars Michelle Yeoh, Stephanie Hsu, who she's amazing. I got to work with her in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and Tally Madel, who is a part of Cocoon Central Dance Team, which you may know because Sunita was a former guest of the podcast.
Right. Yes.
Yep.
Oh, yes. I recognized her. That's funny.
Obviously, Jamie Lee Curtis is in this as well as, how do you say his name? Kay.
I listened to an interview. They said Key. Wait, I just had the interview up. Crap. It was Key, I thought.
Oh, the guy who played Wayman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What else was he in?
So he was in the Goonies.
Well, he was a kid actor.
Yes.
Short Round in Temple of Doom and Data in the Goonies.
Oh, no way. That's him. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And he used to go by Jonathan. Like, that was his American name, was Jonathan.
Oh, really? It's funny because I met him once because my old agent, James, Jackie, has been talking about him for years to me. Like, he has been trying to get back into the acting world, but like, you know, people keep trying to get him to do these kind of like racist movies or whatever. And so much so that if you go...
You mean movies?
Yeah, pretty much. But if you go on Vanity Fair, he did an interview with the Daniels and Michelle, like breaking down one of the scenes. And Michelle says this is Key's first movie in 20 years. And I think they had offered it to somebody first before him, but... I'm excited to see what he does because, like, he got to do so much fun stuff in here. Like, his body language changed throughout it. It was great. I was like, his voice, all that.
Mm-hmm. He was great. I said this before the pod, but unless it's uncanny resemblance, but they definitely, I feel like, took his aesthetic from, like, paying homage to Jackie Chan Hong Kong movies with the hair and the high waist and the fanny pack, like, because that's sort of like Jackie Chan's, like, especially in his, like, non-Hollywood movies, like all the Hong Kong ones.
That scene in the IRS was definitely Jackie Chan.
And he had a fanny pack in the Goonies, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
I think he also had a fanny when he was Data in the Goonies. Because he had like all the like,
yeah, like,
you know, he had like little gadgets and things. And
this is like a burning question because it's like billed as sci-fi, which I mean, I understand why they built that way and it would appeal to sci-fi fans. I watched it with my boyfriend. He was like, it's interesting that they called it sci-fi. And I'm curious what you guys think about that because it's kind of its own. I mean, it's like indie film, but whatever. Well, like when I looked it up, it said this is a sci-fi, which it is in the fact that it's science fiction, but...
Yeah, would you consider it not sci-fi?
Yeah.
I would consider it like a wuxia, more like a blend of wuxia and like indie film. Like, but it because it plays... I think the story is sci-fi, but it follows a lot of elements of like more classic like Hong Kong kung fu films. But that's why I'm like, I don't know, because it almost blends so much that creates its own genre, which I like. Like it takes like, you know, action movies, but it's not sci-fi in the sense of like, I think in the Western world, like Blade Runner and stuff. If that makes sense?
Well, I feel like The Matrix kind of changed the game on that though, because The Matrix used the same kind of fighting style and is definitely sci-fi. I feel like this movie is... Yeah, I feel like this movie is very clearly sci-fi.
Would you call... Star Wars is not sci-fi, it's fantasy, right? You wouldn't call like a classic kung fu movie where they use chi and the elements sci-fi. Oh. So that's why I think it's interesting, because it's sort of this weird hybrid. Because they do use elements and it's rooted in like the sort of old school version of like, you know, you can do anything with just a pinky if you actually channel your chi. But they do add the like sort of Hollywood funness to it. So maybe it's just me because I'm used to seeing also like straight up just like this is real world. People can walk fly in a lot of old Chinese movies.
See, I wouldn't normally think that. I think the dimensional aspects was what makes it sci-fi for me.
Mm. Yeah, and the tech.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I haven't seen enough martial arts films in general to like to be able to differentiate outside of the fact that, like, I think it's the whole second act of this is like skipping time. Like, it's like jumping dimensions to a degree that, like, if you didn't call this sci-fi, I would be confused watching it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I think they were taking the elements of that stuff, of those kind of martial arts and the chi, all that stuff, like, but that was being implemented into the world of sci-fi because there are other things that are fantastical in this film that are more just like, well, that's just this happenstance that happened because there's multiple universes and anything is possible, essentially, you know.
This is my theory that I don't know if anyone, it's probably not popular, but to me, it doesn't feel sci-fi, even though you're right, all on paper it is. It doesn't feel sci-fi because it doesn't feel like it's a future world that like could exist. It feels like we are seeing honestly, it felt so true. I know that's weird to say, but it felt like how somebody could make a future.
You were like, this is plausible.
Yeah, like someone made a movie about 2022 in 1989 and it was exactly 2022. It almost would feel like they were just prescient. I watched this and I almost feel like, yeah, no, this is how, that this is what it is. And now we know. Like, it feels like we are watching a movie that we just didn't know it was like this, but now we do. Does that make sense? Like,
I mean, yes.
They had one of the clearest paths into like what causes the multiverse and how the multiverse even works that like it did seem really plausible. Like it was just like I love that they were just like every decision you make creates a branch. Like they're just like.
And it wasn't about the science. Maybe that's why. Because they didn't ever try to figure it out. It was just like, yeah, this exists. Now get to know your daughter. You know, it's like, okay.
They explained it. I feel like there were several scenes explaining what was happening multiple times throughout the movie.
You know what? I think my brain was overloaded.
And I love that they were like, that they did that thing. I've been talking about this a lot with particularly these movies lately, where they're like, it's like that movie, but the movie that they reference is totally different.
Yes, like the Mandela effect, I feel like they were trying to make a joke about it, but I like that they didn't call it that because I hate that term. But you know, when they're like, oh, I remember the Berenstain Bears or whatever.
It's so interesting. I've been watching Peacemaker and they also did that Berenstain Bears.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood is sponsored by BetterHelp. Guys, I just had a job end, which, you know, I was very fortunate to have. But it's so funny how quickly stress starts to accumulate when you're not working.
It's too much. It's too much. It's heavy.
You know?
I got the shakes and, you know, the heart palpitations, all of it.
I agree. I will say I've had the benefit of not being unemployed this long since 2009. And what are we in April? Soon to be May. And I have not had a paycheck all of 2024. So this is the most stress I've ever had. My parents may need to get an aide. And I'm like, who's coming to save the day? So stress is high. Anxiety is high.
And, you know, sometimes to talk about this stress, therapy can be a safe space. Like, get that stuff off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down, you know, instead of just keeping it all bottled up and feeling like you have to hold everything inside. I know therapy has helped me. I almost look at it as like check-in. Like, sometimes I got a lot to say, sometimes not so much, but it's like, it is super, super helpful.
Yeah, I appreciate getting the tools to like kind of understand the mechanism of how I'm behaving, you know, and reacting in certain situations.
Yeah, I use BetterHelp, and Timothy, black male therapist, saves the day because he gets it, man. I'm like, you know what? Thank you, bro. For sometimes it's just 30 minutes of just me rambling, and I'm like, oh, you didn't even say hello yet. and he's like, keep going. I'm like, thank you. Yes.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. It's suited to your schedule, which is absolutely essential these days. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and you can get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you want, switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/jump today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/jump.
You gotta jump to get that BetterHelp. BetterHelp!
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road, ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartland!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming May 23rd, only on Max. Subscription required.
So, you open Google Chrome on your phone, you're hunting for a super rare first edition vinyl of a band you're obsessed with, when you're supposed to be working. But this site you tapped on seems pretty shady. And Daryl from IT just jumped up from his desk. Oh no, he's coming your way.
It's a good thing built-in malware protection keeps you safe and sound. Not from Daryl, though. Sorry. There's no place like Chrome. Download Google Chrome on your phone.
Before we keep going, we got to do initial thoughts.
Okay, sorry.
Also, for those people who don't listen to this podcast, we do think you should really see this film before you listen to it, because we are going to spoil it, and it's definitely worth seeing.
You should definitely see it.
All right, but yes, Teresa, please, initial thoughts. What was your initial thoughts when you first watched this movie?
Instead of saying initial thoughts, because it won't be succinct, I will read a brief iPhone notes I wrote of just thoughts after.
That sounds like initial thoughts to me.
It's April 10th, 2022. Yeah, but I didn't think I was going to read it, but then I looked at it and I feel like you guys will enjoy this. 9:51 p.m. Okay, I watched this last night. I wrote everything. Cross, died on cross, negative, positive, beginnings and endings. Go where the end meets the beginning. Find the cycles, Saturn and Venus, Wayman and Evelyn, Adam and Eve. Create yourself, fight yourself, hot dog hands.
Truly amazing.
Wow. Okay. Honestly, I feel like I understand it. That's the crazy part.
Oh, wait, there's one more. Okay. This is the part that I think will make more sense. Reason versus question mark. The code is the balance. Blend the colors, find the line, be the switch. What's your formula? Okay.
Wow, that sounds beautiful.
And the colors, yes. Black. Be the switch.
Soak it in, okay?
Be the switch, honestly. Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Can I explain be the switch? I think James has heard it before.
I also want you to explain Venus and Saturn and why those are those diametrically opposed in astrology? Or
no, but I would explain it as, I will say I took an edible right after I watched the movie, not while I wasn't high watching it, but there may have been crossover with this note and me taking the edible. But be the switch, I will say I've explained sober to James, so hopefully it's not super wacky, but it's kind of what they said about, like, you find the most least probable moment, and then because it feels similar to something in another timeline, you can switch. So I think of it like if you're in a room and you're like, I feel like I end up being this a lot because I just feel like I end up in rooms where I'm like, I don't fit into any category, but then in some level, I fit in with everyone on some level. Like I'll be like, oh, like, yeah, I grew up bi. Oh yeah, I'm a twin. Oh yeah, I'm an actress. Oh, I did improv. Oh, you know, like I used to suck my thumb, whatever. Like just random, really specific things. So that's what I mean by be the switch. It's like you find that thing that connects you and the rest of the room, but you can flip between being other and inside. And the Venus Saturn thing is like when orbits, Saturn obviously takes longer to orbit, Venus takes shorter to orbit, but they both orbit around the sun. So there's this layer of like, when we talk about Michelle's or Evelyn's character being the worst version of herself, it's not really that she's actually on the destiny to be the best version. And that involves finishing the cycle of being the worst. So I think of it as like, instead of cycles being linear, time is like there's a bigger cycle and there's a little cycle, and as you complete the more complex ones, it moves on to like you almost come back around where you see how your childhood folded into where you are now. Does that make sense?
I mean, I'm rocking with it. I think I'm taking it all in.
I think so.
Okay,
it does. I was wondering if there was a specific reason why Venus and Saturn and not like, for instance, Mercury and Uranus, but everything else you said makes sense.
There may have been. I don't remember. Honestly, I'll say that one. I don't quite remember why I wrote that specific thing, but I know I think about the planet's orbit and time a lot.
Well, I guess those were great initial thoughts. Who wants to go next?
Yeah, I mean, I can go next. I loved it. I had a great time. I thought the writing was really strong. I thought the directing was great. The acting was, I loved everyone. Everyone was so good. I thought everyone gave great performances. And me not remembering that the actor that played Wayman was Data in the Goonies, right? Is like, now I'm like seeing all of the similarities between how he acted as a kid and like how he acts now. Like it's like, it's very much like there's that animated kind of performance is still very present in him in a lovely way. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say besides like, because I know we will get into it and I want to talk about it as we get into it, but like, it really is just, it's such a fun story You know, they, I love the way that the science of the multiverse is presented, and the journey was just like such a fun journey to go on. And like, and there's so many like fun specifics throughout that feel very unique to this movie, like the like unique to the writers and unique to the family that we're watching. So I just can't wait to talk about the specific stuff. I really had a great time.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, this movie was so fun. It was great. It was like, I had no expectations of what it was going to be. And at first I just thought it was going to be like a really good drama, you know, about a mom and her daughter. And then like when the first time, like you see in the security footage, you know, women jumping around like in the laundromat, I was like, what's going on? I was like, what's happening? I also did have some people I don't know if they had taken edibles, but they were laughing at times where I was like, well, I don't know what you're laughing at. And then at times where it made sense to laugh. So that threw me off a little bit. But after I got over it, then, I really enjoyed it. And the end, there was definitely a part that like was choking me up. Yeah, like I'm excited to talk about it because there's a lot of philosophical thoughts in this. And it was so inventive. And it was also like borrowing in a fun way from other different films and things like that, which was great. If I had to give one small criticism, I thought that the end could have been a little tighter. It kind of felt like Return of the King to me, where it was like several different endings at the same time. And I was like, this is great. You could have chose two of these and not had four, but that's whatever.
Yeah, I would say cut 15 minutes. The movie is 2 hours and 19 minutes long. I would say hover around 2 hours.
It is very long. It didn't need the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, like, and it was, you particularly felt it at the end, I felt like, because you kind of like had a really strong, to me, emotional moment. And then they had another strong emotional moment. And then they tried to do it again. And I was like, okay, guys, like, you don't need three in a row.
Everything everywhere all at once, bro. Everything everywhere.
Yeah, I know. I also just think that movies in general, and I've been saying this for a long time, and SNL finally just did a sketch about this, the fact, like the short movies kind of thing. Like, a rap about like wishing movies were shorter like they used to be. But it's true. And I was just like, okay, so I'm not the only one feeling it. Like every movie is too long now. Like literally almost every single movie that's made is like 15 minutes too long. You know, I could be saying like, oh, it's because I'm older, but I bet if they actually took the collective, like all the major releases and added them up, you know, whatever, I feel like the average running time of movies are longer now than they used to be. And I have some theories on that, but that's another day. We're here to talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is a fantastic film. And it has to be getting nominated for Oscars. I know Oscars just happened, but I'm just saying, like, it's rare that you watch a film and you're like, well, I mean, come on, they got to nominate several awards for this film. I don't care what else is coming out this year. It's definitely going to be one of the top 10 movies.
They're probably re-releasing in theaters in like the fall. Look, I'm not going to lie, man. I saw this movie the week before it became like wide release. And I saw it in a packed theater full of white people. So I was already tense. I was super tense. And like Braylock was saying, like the movie, and it should be, was being joyed so much.
Joyed?
At certain parts. And they were laughing so much. I was like, is this funny? You know what it was?
Wait, I want to hear a specific part because I'm picturing it. And I definitely, when you said cried, I was like, I was full on bawling through a lot of it. But now I'm really curious what parts the white people were laughing at.
Like literally almost any, this is my thing about it. I'm going to be straight up. It's like, this movie was a great, like, I hated this movie for the first hour. Like I was completely against it. I was like, I don't like this. I was like, it's pretentious as shit. What the fuck is happening? I don't like it. Once it got to like right before the third act, I was crying the rest of the movie. And then I was like, because you know what it was? It was like, I think it was so much for me. I didn't know anything about it, but I do think I'm having like a personal aversion to very artsy philosophical things where I'm like, everything doesn't have to, this is an A24 movie, but I'm like, everything doesn't have to be an A24 movie. And so I was watching it and I was like, this is another fucking lamb turn into a person fucking movie. I'm talking to a pig.
Yeah, we should have warned you that Gerard he now just doesn't like A24.
No, it's not that.
Did y'all see the trailer for the Shell movie? The Shell.
Oh, Marcel, the Shell. Well, I mean, I'm very much about that. So
before A24 first came out, I was like, I was a big proponent to everything they were doing. But now it just feels like when I saw that movie with the lamb thing.
Well, they have a formula.
I was like, what?
They made the lamb one, right? That was terrible. That's terrible. I didn't even see it. I heard it was terrible.
So this movie, like for real, like I thought once it got to the end, I was like, oh, I get what's happening. And I literally said, because I got there early and there was like some random woman sitting next to me. I think I said out loud, I get it. It's beautiful. But it took like a moment for me to like, all of it to like make sense. It was like the daughter and then the mom. I was like, I get this now. And it just, and it literally clicked. But for the first hour, yo, I was not here. It was one of the movie. So to me, is so good now. I found it now, but I was like, I need to see this script. I need to know how did they pitch this movie?
I'm curious too, because like so much of it is so, the way they do the fight choreography is so good, because I feel like they didn't make Kung Fu the punchline, which does happen a lot in American Hollywood movies, even when you get big Kung Fu stars, but they really did did their research at least, because it's not full on Hong Kong, like Kung Fu, like, but just the long tracking shots and the idea of putting the jokes into the moves and not the jokes into the fact that they're doing moves, you know, like with the, what's it called, when Evelyn's whole ascent into the stairs and she's like fighting with love and she does Kung Fu, but then it's a hug. Like that to me is like, that's really funny because they did something with the Kung Fu genre, but that's not, you don't get to see that a lot in Hollywood, like when they do Kung Fu, because they're just like, look, people are screaming and fighting or whatever. That's not an accent. That's like me pretending to be me being like a executive. Okay. It came out weird. It was like a goofy accent, not a Chinese accent. Oh God, I'm going to get canceled. Okay.
Data had a utility belt. That's what Melissa just shared.
Yes. It had a puncher on the end, right? Like it had a boxing glove. Yo, that shit was fire.
Well, I was just going to say quickly, Gerard, one of the things that I remember that they one of the first times I thought it was when he was jumping around, like you saw it on the security cam. And again, maybe they just knew what the movie was already going into it. But like, to me, when you first saw that, it wasn't funny. It was like, what's going on? Like, but they were laughing like it was hysterical. And I was just like, what? Like it was, and it was also a bunch of white people that it made me feel weird. It was like,
and they kept laughing at him.
Why are you laughing at him? I was like, we have zero context for what's happening right now. And they were like, and I was like, what's going on?
Almost anything he said at one point, like when he was like, because you know, the thing I'm very thankful that this movie did is that they showed him as multiple types of a man. And I think very early on, he is what a lot of Hollywood has as an Asian man. He was kind of like submissive. His voice was very soft and squeaky. And they were people were laughing so much, I couldn't tell, was he saying jokes or was, because I think for me, it's like, I couldn't tell whether or not they were laughing at a stereotype or laughing because he was just doing a good job saying his lines.
And it's tough because he is funny and he's being funny, but like, and again, maybe this is because they kind of knew going in that it was also a comedy, but like, for me, not knowing what it was, I was like, there are amusing things happening, but like not to the point that you're laughing. Like it's like more like smile, chuckle, but like also this feels like the dynamics of everything that was being set up in the beginning were real. Like they were pretty serious. Like it seemed like this was a marriage that was like on thin ice. You know, this mom is clearly overworked, but also like because of that overbearing and like her relationship with her daughter is obviously super strained, and like, and so it was just like, I don't know, it was weird.
Can I add something to that? Because this is super interesting, because I hadn't thought about it like that, but like I definitely feel like doing stand-up, sometimes there are things where I'm like, I'll tell a story that's like funny to me because it's a funny situation. And then like that will happen, right? Like I have a story about like seeing a fortune teller in Taiwan or whatever, which is funny because going to fortune tellers in general, there's a lot of fun there. But I think like people will laugh kind of more in a way where you're like, oh, they're envisioning like something exotic versus like, oh, I'm just an imbecile who goes to fortune tellers or whatever, you know? No offense. I do go to them. So it's fine if you like them. That's really interesting because I feel like on some level that I'm also conditioned to laugh at things that I find like traumatic but funny because there's an element of them know, like me knowing where it came from too. Because I'm trying to think in the beginning when I watched it, I did find it to be a funny movie, but not laugh out loud when he was moving around. I was more like, oh, ooh, but it wasn't like scary either. And I wonder, like, that is so interesting because like when he is being submissive, I saw that as like the nuance of it wasn't him being caricature submissive. Like I've literally seen my mom like say things like that to my dad, and in a way where like it made me feel like, oh, but also like, haha, this is cathartic to see it represented and kind of like them being comedic about it. Like I felt safe watching it. I wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna have to watch trauma porn or whatever. So it's interesting because I agree with you. Like I think there's a nuance to the laughter, but that being said, I will say like I did find a lot of this very funny, and I felt funny in an insider way at sometimes, if that makes sense. Like when she said like girlfriend, or she's like, she's her friend. Like I laughed, even though that's sad, but I'm like, as a queer woman, I'm like, yeah, yeah. Okay. Like I know.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else, like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or five-star hotels for two-star prices in Cabo. Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice. You know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you download the Kroger app, you have easy access to savings every day. Get the most out of weekly sales and receive personalized coupons toward your favorite items, all while earning one fuel point for every dollar spent. Because shopping at Kroger, whether in-store or online, is easy. And saving money is even easier with the Kroger app. So get the most value out of every trip, every time. Download the Kroger app now to save big. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Must have a digital account to redeem offers. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
I will say this. Okay. I will say this. This movie has gotten one of the biggest laughs out of me, I think, in the last few years. When they're doing that fight at the end and when they have to, what is it? What do they call it when they're trying to jump?
Just going straight. No,
I'm just saying. I just want to say one thing before we get into the top. Because I'm.
Okay. Again, yeah.
It's like they need a launching pad or they need a new, like, what? I can't remember what the terminology was, but it's something like.
When we realize the guys she's fighting, it has to be up their butt. And like the one dude jumps over the cubicle in slow motion. My theater went nuts and I was nuts right with them. I was like, cause I was like, oh, don't do this. It's gonna be a little hang. Like, this isn't the best joke. But when that motherfucker when he jumps with no pants on,
hilarious payoff for what I thought was just a visual joke of what her trophies looked like. Like it was so funny that they were just like, nope, they gotta put it up their butt. But this in particular, this element of the movie was my favorite part. That like. And it felt like the most fun use of that like thing of like, listen, the multiverse exists and it's whatever path you take is what causes a branch. And like what helps you to leap is doing an insane thing. Like you have to now do an insane thing in order to be close to that next thing. And it's just it makes so much sense. For as much as it's like, what is that science? It is that anything, but it's such an easy, like, yep, In order for you to get there, you have to now do something crazy. It would have been normal if you would have taken this other path, but now it's crazy. You know, I loved that. I thought that was so cool.
It makes like a really fun joke engine too, because I like at first I was like, oh, I'm going to go get sick of this device. But and you never do, because they do heighten it. Like when they, you know, bring back the raccoon and then the hot dog hands with the feet, like it pays off in a plot way. And it's like so good. But also I'm sure they had to like go back and add some of those, and they probably started as jokes. I can't imagine hot dog hands was in the original pitch. It does like make it really satisfying to like, you start to trust them to just like, I'm just gonna laugh instead of groaning or rolling my eyes, because it'll just like pay off in a way that's gonna be fun.
Right. Well, yeah, it starts pretty grounded in the sense that you have there's bills that are collecting up. The kind of main plot device is that their taxes are due, but they're getting audited. They have to like figure that out. And they're hosting some sort of like, they're hosting like a New Year's, Chinese New Year's event at the laundromat and like inviting random people like Jenny Slate.
That part was a little weird to me. I thought there was something else to it.
Yeah, it was strange.
That part I was confused about.
We never really got an explanation of why she was doing that. or like why she was inviting like random strangers. Like, was it, yeah, what was that for?
And like excited by them too. I was like, what's happening?
Stephanie's character, Joy, she was just trying to introduce, you know, her girlfriend Becky, and wanted to kind of be accepted by the grandfather as well. And that wasn't, you know, I like Teresa said that wasn't happening. She kind of was like, no, he won't get it. But then all of this is kind of interrupted by Wayman. The first time it happens when they're going to the IRS.
The first time it happens when she talks to him, it's when they're in the elevator going up to the IRS. Yeah.
And that was the first time we get the, what does he have? Like a Bluetooth kind of like headphones.
Yeah, yes, like two Bluetooth headphones, and they like light up, and I don't know, this is incredible. He's just like very quickly explains this whole thing to it sounds absurd, like I won't remember this whole, you know, make sure we have to block the camera with this umbrella. These are the steps. You go to the left, you go to the janitor's closet, and your world's going to change. Or you go to your regular appointment. And then he like writes on the back of some papers that I think at this point we've seen are the divorce papers, but I'm not making this connection at this moment. But he like writes the steps, the weird steps that she has to take in order to step into the pocket dimension, which is absurd. Like it's like,
because it was, yeah. Because I was so curious about how this was going to go down. I will say this, Michelle, she has been an actress that clearly we've seen for some time, but like, she normally is, at least for the movies I've seen her in, doing martial arts and is very like stoic or like just a super badass. So the fact that she did so much comedy in this movie, to me, that wasn't even like punching jokes. It was like literally character-based comedy, which I thought was great. Like even watching her when she first gets to the table and seeing her interact with Jamie Lee Curtis, who was fantastic. So this thing, when she came on, I knew something was up, because I was like, what tone is this movie right now? I was like, because she's in a whole nother movie. Like, what is happening?
Well, that was completely comedic. Yeah. Then it was like, okay, yeah, this is a comedy, obviously, right now.
Yeah. Because that's when it hit me. I was like, all right, this is crazy. But when Michelle puts the shoes on the other foot, I was like, yo, all right, we're getting there. Is that when she goes? Wait, no, this a lot happens before this, doesn't it? Like, don't we see the daughter and stuff like that? Like, don't we have the interaction with the daughter first?
No, I mean, well, yeah, I mean, we get a little bit.
We do have the interaction with the daughter, but Bray kind of explained that already, like quickly. But like, yeah, like they, like, this is when she switched the shoes. I loved this scene because she's in both places. She's in both places. Like, what even was that? Like, she's both in the closet and still carrying on this other scene. I thought that was so cool. It was such a fun, like haven't quite seen it played that way, you know.
In the closet, you just like blew my mind, because I was like, oh, I feel like they were definitely doing like maybe her mom is, and I don't know if I'm just projecting, because like my mom is always like saying
no, but I think you're right.
Yeah, and then she's like very much like, I feel like her character is bi, like she is not, we're not being like she's closeted gay, because she does she's like almost like she loves Waymond. She found her person, but it's not really gender based. And then we have this multiverse where she's with Jamie Lee Curtis's character. But I just made that connection when she's in the closet, literally.
And the next, I can't remember if it's called a launching pad or whatever it is, but whatever her, the next like key was for her to say, I love Deirdre. Like that was the next one.
Oh my God, yes.
And they don't let that up. That stay, you know, it stays throughout and it becomes, it even is fully fleshed out at the end with actually seeing that multiverse where they have the hot dog fingers.
No, I was just going to say, I did like, that was another thing I liked, that they didn't do the trope of like, this is like inside outside kind of joke, but like, of like, oh, Asian moms don't say I love you. Cause it's not true like that. Like, it's a funny joke to be like, well, they don't show the love the way like white moms do probably, like, you know, and you know, sometimes we get hit, but you know, it's a different way, but like they didn't do that. Like she clearly loved her. It's just, she didn't know how to connect to her. And so I like that it was never like the fact that we just kind of, we didn't even think about it, but now that I'm thinking about it, it makes sense. That's, I think on so many levels, it connects to like a human level. Cause she's like, oh, I have to say, I love you to this tax audit lady, but they didn't go for like a joke of like, oh, you gotta tell your daughter you love, you know, cause she, it was clear she did. It was just, she didn't know how to connect.
Cause it was like at the very, before this scene, when her daughter leaves. And it's funny because apparently I was reading, they cast Awkwafina as that part. But Awkwafina had to back out last minute because of one of her mini movies. And I'm like, no offense, like Awkwafina's great. But I'm like, it was something about Stephanie that was just really like, it was just great. But
remember, in Shang-Chi, there was like the friends, the couple. Yeah. And they were in the end scene too. They're in the bar together. And that's Wong comes, you know, and anyway.
I think she went to NYU. I saw her in my welcome week. Like they did a show at NYU called the reality show. And she was, I still remember because it was so good. And they're like, I mean, you know, she was like one of the only Asian people on stage and had a very specific, like she's very good. And so I still remember like, oh my God, I watched you in the reality show.
She was also, she's also been in the latest season of Marvelous Miss Maisel. She's great. In that.
Oh, great. I like the part when Michelle is like, clearly Stephanie's hurt. And it's like at the car, and it's before this scene when they go to the IRS, and you could tell she wants to say something nice, but then instead just says, "You've gotten fat."
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah. Oh my God, that part was like, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, I guess I didn't forget about. I already translated it in my head.
Because it was wow. Such a moment where it was like it was a big deal, and you saw. I mean, I don't know. I think the nuance was so real. It was like you saw like Michelle like kind of go through like very quickly in her head, say something. Stop eating so much. You're getting fat. Yeah, you're getting fat. And then she like doubles down on the fatness. And then like they both just stand there before Stephanie gets in the car. I'm like, I thought that scene was good because it like really sets up how they end the movie.
She also might have wanted to say that like, I need your help. I need you to come with me to this thing. Because while they were there, they were like, your daughter was supposed to, wasn't your daughter supposed to be here? And they weren't supposed to do it. But that's what I was
translate. Yeah.
I do think she was showing caring though, because the fact that they set up the scene before when Joy tells Becky, like, if she tells you you're fat, that means she likes you, which means she's processed it. And I don't think that was unintentional. Like, I think they do that because it's interesting because I did actually just like, here I am being like, she loves her. And I totally had already translated that scene in my head because like, I know that means I love you. So I literally didn't even read that as you're fat because I know they portrayed it as I love you. And I know that it's still hurtful, but it's hurtful because she's like, mom, you just don't get it. Like, but she's not like, mom, you hate me and think I'm fat. Because literally like a week ago, my mom was talking to me on FaceTime and she was like, you know, if you wear your eyebrows like that, it means you're not going to have money. And I'm like, okay, like why? She's like, no, but it might not be true. It's just a thing. But I'm like, that is such a like Asian mom thing where you just like, I'm showing you that I care by noticing things that are, I'm going to pick on. And I'm like, I've learned how to tune it out. So I'm just like, thanks mom. Cause she also feels like I'm just showing you love the way I was shown. And it's like almost like more triggering for me to be mad, but I also don't like accept the, you know, insult. I'm just like, okay, thanks mom. But yeah, I guess in some way I translated that.
Yeah. Which is what the Joy character did. She was just like, okay. She wasn't like mad. She was just like, it's, you know.
And I love, I was just going to say that I love that at the end, when she's doing her end monologue and finally saying like her truth, it starts with, you are getting fat. Like, it, that just is how she feel. Like, she like she's like, I do want to tell you this. Like, I do want to tell you that I feel like you've gained weight. Like, that just is true. Like, I love that they were like, they left that into her, like, come to Jesus moment. I thought that was so cool.
No, man, I mean, this whole sequence was cool because I think, like, once, you know, once they, you know, they have that whole thing with Jimmy Lee Curtis, and then, like, they finally get ready to leave. But then, like, she's now starting to believe the other way, man. So she just punches Jamie Lee Curtis. And then that helps trigger, what do they call him? Alpha Wayman? Like, what is his name? When Alpha Wayman comes, and he literally goes in. Everything about this, Reese, you're right. Everything about this felt like Jackie Chan from, like, Rumble in the Bronx to me. Like, yeah, his outfit. And the fact that he literally was fighting, and then we had the three people walk up who didn't look like they could fight for the most part. Like, I was like... Like, they kept showing that one dude who eventually comes and does the butt thing at the end. I'm like, all right, so clearly this one guy can fight. I thought that scene was played so well.
Well, though, that's what that's different versions of them. They couldn't really fight, but that first fight scene, I was like, whoa, like, this is a real fight scene. Like, it wasn't, I guess, because the rest of the film felt like it was made on a smaller budget. You know what I mean? It was like, we're doing sci-fi, but, like, in the way that Eternals, you know, Sunshine of the Spotless Mind did sci-fi. Like, you know, it's like lo-fi. But then that fight scene, I was like, whoa, this is a real, this is like a real fight scene. It was really good.
Oh, even before that, sorry, I skipped ahead. Is I love the scene when we get to see the future, and when the big bad, who we're waiting to see who it is like coming through killing folk. And it was something about that where I was hoping it was going to be the daughter. But I love when we finally get the reasoning why she becomes, or why everyone thinks she's like the villain of the universe. You know what I mean? It's like being pushed so far. And I think that is relatable. At least I feel like that's relatable across races, because I feel like a lot of times, especially if you come from an immigrant family or a family that's minority, it's like it is a heavy pressure to, like, be better, to do this, to this. But what happens when the kid cracks, literally cracks? I thought that I was so happy. And they stay in this building for quite some time, right? Like, isn't, like, they're here and we kind of jump to, like, the other dimensions when she realizes the divorce papers, but then she gets
killed in the other dimension, right? Because they break through the door and he's just like, don't worry, you'll die here, but it's just one of the many versions of you. You'll go back.
I like that. It almost had Die Hard vibes in that building when they end up in the lobby.
It was.
Hey, this is Tim Heidecker, and I'm glad to be back in Glendale, California, in the studio with my good friends DJ Doug Pound and Vic Berger for another episode of our podcast, Office Hours Live. This week, we had a very special guest, His Golden Messenger, who played a beautiful tune for us. We laughed, we had fun, and you should tune in to Office Hours Live this week, and quite frankly, every week on your podcast app of choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live.
And again, it was cool because, you know, when he finally gets into the, when they both get into, I guess, a conference room or something like that, and Alpha Wayman just starts eating a bagel because he doesn't have cream cheese, because the world has, like, lost cream, milk and dairy and all this stuff.
Cow. It was like, there are no cows. Like,
yeah,
like,
that's what it was.
Cows went
there
away.
No cows, yeah.
It's so hard to describe this movie because they're, like, jumping around dimensions so much in this scene. Like, between there, when he go back to Alpha Wayman's trailer thingy, versus when we see, what's the bad guy's name?
Jabu Tsubaki.
Jabuki or something? Jabuki Tsubaki.
But it's so funny that every time she tries to say the name, she can't say it.
Jabu Tsubu Koopu.
Jabu Tsubaki. She, like, says, like, it's too funny that she keeps getting the name wrong. When we first meet her and she's coming in basically doing the Thanos turning people into, like, people into rubber duckies and shit. Like, this whole sequence was fire. I thought it was so
because she
cool.
was having fun. It was like she was having so much fun going in and out of outfits, which I just looked at the budget. Like, the budget was 25 mil, which is not a lot. And, like, how they shot this was so seamless of, like, I would love to just see the behind the scenes, because she goes in and out so much from costume to costume to costume, and it feels so fluid in how they shot it. I'm like, this is also, her performance is great. Like, it's just it was just so smooth, man.
The costumes are so fun. Like, it's interesting because, like, I feel like the movie is very singularity in the sense of, like, I mean, obviously it would hit a lot of things I like because just by the nature of it, but even the costumes, like, I fucking love rhinestones. And I feel like that's, like, also some version of when you're, like, feel like misrepresented or underrepresented, like her being a queer woman or girl, I guess she's a teenager. There's this element of you're always kind of putting on a costume no matter where you go. So you might as well lean into it and enjoy it. And so she really does have fun with it where she's like, hey, the truth is just that we're all fucking like a singular one consciousness. But since you guys don't see it yet, I'm just going to have a lot of fun. And so in some ways she was like joy. Like she never really, until she talks to her mom at the end, is she like sad. And I thought that was a cool way of kind of like playing off of her name, being like, when we see her as Joy, she's like very upset. And then when we see her as like Chaos, she's like, just having a fucking ball.
And also her Chaos was, to me, is one of those things that feels like when someone is truly misunderstood, like the whole time they're setting her up to be like this universe ender, whereas at the end of the day, she is literally just searching for the version of her mom who's just like her. Cause like, you know, there is that kind of feeling of being alone in a universe. Like she's like, and all these multiverses, I feel by myself and I can't do anything else. So I created a fucking donut. You know what I mean? And we don't know what it does yet, but like I created this donut and I've been scouring looking for you, you know?
So one of the things about that is she, you know, just, I mean, we're skipping around, so might as well talk about this now. Like one of the things she says is that like, she created this because she could see everything everywhere all at once. It was meaningless. Everything was meaningless, right? Which for me, one of my favorite books of the Bible growing up was Ecclesiastes. And that's like it's like a part of that book is like, it's written by David, you know, if you know the Bible at all, like King David, his son Solomon, who's supposed to be the wisest person in the world. Cause that's what God is like, I'll get you any gift that you want. And he asked for the gift of wisdom. He wants to be the wisest person in the world. And so he gets that, but then he like knows everything and he, you know, accumulates all this land and all this wealth and has all these concubines and blah, blah, blah. And he like, and then he writes this book called Ecclesiastes that's in the Bible. And there's like part of it that he's just like, I've seen everything. There's nothing new under the sun. Like people will come and go. People will think that they're doing something new, but they're not. Everything's meaningless. It's all meaningless. Nothing matters. I was just like thinking about that when she was saying it. It was just like when you get to a point where you feel like you know everything, because so much of humans is about us like expanding our knowledge, expanding, like, you know, we're explorers, we're curious, you know, like that's the whole vibe of Star Trek. It's like, we want to explore the ends of the earth. We just want to seek out new life and find new civilizations and go where nobody's gone before. And like, we have that kind of nature about us. And even people who don't feel like they're that curious, you're still like, there's always a striving, right? To be better, for your kids' lives to be better, for your life to be better, for society's life to be better, for the world around us to be better, you know? And if you get to this point where you're just like, well, I know everything. I've seen every single iteration of what it could be, and it's boring and it's meaningless and nothing matters because it could be this, it could be that, but who cares?
They left that in the Bible.
I think that's so interesting.
They left that in?
And all of that. But James, to that point though, I always felt that way growing up. I was like, it's so crazy that this, like, there is a part in it that they're like, you know, like they bring God into it of like, you know, you got like the only thing you can do is love God and blah, blah, blah. But like, it is interesting that a book like Ecclesiastes and in the Bible, like truly, like you read it and you're like, whoa, this feels not like a lot of the other books around it that feel like very like, this is the meaning of life, you know? And this book is like, it's all meaningless.
I feel like that's so interesting. And I almost feel like the counter, not counter, but I would say like the part the movie addresses that is when Wayman talks about how he fights with love. And I know it's so cheesy, but that really tied it back for me because like, I really feel like when you were talking about when you've known everything, my first thought was like, when we build algorithms in the past, you know, when you're just doing a curve or a parabola, the formula is stagnant, right? Like you can only find the next point based on what it is. But once you get like derivatives involved, or once you get rate of change of change, which is what they're kind of talking about, like when you add more love to it, you actually do create new things in a way where it is new. And I think when you're looking at like, oh, I know the formula for the video game of life, you can only play within the rules. You can't change the rules. Otherwise you don't know it. But if everyone knew all the rules and decided to constantly change and do everything they wanted for fun, you end up having this really fun moment, which the movie I think tries to capture at the end, where like the feet playing the piano or whatever, because it's like, that's so silly, but it's like, that is actually what would happen. I feel like you would actually have no fear because you're facing the fear. And I really like that. Like, I feel like we haven't quite gotten there in society, but that I haven't seen a lot of movies that break it down like that, like outside of the Disney, like broad, like, oh, love is everything. Like, they really show you how like love is fighting in some way, and it's fighting yourself and not being afraid of it.
I mean, like, that is hands down my favorite part of the movie. But like, it's what makes the movie for me. That, and that's the part that like kind of was like, was definitely choking me up, because you saw how each iteration of him, it didn't matter what the circumstances were, every iteration that he was in, he was still loving and trying to protect her. Like, even in the present world that she was in, where he was going to divorce her, he was still protecting her, you know, and trying to love and still had love for her. And like, it was just like the idea of like, yeah, that love in and of itself is a weapon, which is a thing that another thing that I got from my understandings of Christianity and that belief system that I hold of like love, like that is the greatest commandments, right? Or like love your neighbor as yourself and love God. And the idea of that being like love is the thing that conquers all, you know? And it's like a euphemism. It's something that people can like hear and say all the time. And you're right. Like because it's funny, the Matrix, we talked about this a little bit, because the new Matrix, the Matrix 4, what's Matrix 4 called again? Resurrections?
Oh yeah,
Resurrections.
No,
Resurrections.
Resurrections.
Rebooted.
Rebranded.
Yeah, Resurrections. Like, it was kind of similar in that, except it was between two specific people, right? It was like the love of those people is what is their power, that kind of thing. But this movie hit in a different way, because it was almost like, because he was like, you don't have to fight in that way. You can fight with love, which is something that people feel like is cheesy, but it does. It changes things. It just does. Like, because at the end of the day, you know, there's a cycle of violence that will never stop. But the only thing that stops it is somebody choosing not to fight. I don't know. Anyway, that's very
interesting. You bring up the Matrix. Like the Matrix ending, I don't know, whatever. I'm not gonna get into them, but just the single part about the ending being like, I just felt like they're like, oh, look at us, we're being so progressive. And then it was like the most binary thing to be like, and then these two people are in love, and that's why the world is saved. But I like that this didn't do that, because this took like the idea of like all these tropes that you, like, I'm glad you mentioned the Bible, because I feel like there's so many archetypes in mythology that aren't actually just about black and white binary, like love is conquers evil. It's about you are everything, right? This bagel is everything. You contain evil and good, and it's kind of like what you choose to lean into. And I like that they kind of use the almost, I don't know if it's like on purpose, like the Holy Trinity, like touchstone, but it's not just love between the man and the woman. It's the child, and the child has this element of being you, right? Like she create, like it's her daughter. And so, and the part she rejects about her daughter is her, because she created her. And I feel like that kind of took it a step further, because it's sort of like, we do want to see our children as people, obviously, but it's all really hard to separate the part where they're tied to you and because they always will be. So instead of separating that, you just have to learn to love that about yourself, like the part that you're like rejecting, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, I did love the element of love, because at one point I'm gonna be real. Like at one point I didn't like the delivery of it, because I don't know, for some reason it when the cool version of the husband said it, like when they were sitting behind the premiere or something like that. I don't know why. For some reason it came off like he was better than her for some reason. And then like it instantly, and maybe that's my own reaction when it comes to things like that. I feel like certain people do things to like be or feel better than someone else. And I was like, I don't like where this is going unless we address this. And we do eventually in the main universe later on after she stabs him. Because it is something about that I really enjoyed earlier when she goes and sees the rich version of herself who knows Kung Fu and all those things. And she comes back and she goes, I saw my life without you. It was great. I was like, and she just like really goes into like how beautiful her world was and all the things she accomplished without the husband. And I get the juxtaposition of, you know, if she would have let him just leave and go to America, what that would have meant. But when we got to that back door, I mean, alleyway area, and he was talking about like, something about it just felt like the dynamic shift, and he now felt a superior being to her. But then later on, as we got to that final act and she's doing that final fight sequences, and you know, she like stabs him and he still stands up. And it is almost like the acceptance of his love, but also her power comes into it as well, because it felt like him saying that took away her power and her agency, but it came back to me when she literally addresses him and the fact that his power is love, but also she has this ability to do what she needs to do. And also the daughter at one point on the steps talks about what she can accomplish. So it wasn't just like,
yeah,
maybe because I'm a dude and I'm hypersensitive to it now, but.
No, Gerard, I'll say.
No, that's
it. Well, I'll just say that I similarly, once he started talking, I it sort of took me back to something that happened with Turning Red too, where it was like, oh, and now the man who we haven't heard from is now gonna teach us something, you know, like that thing that I feel like happens in a lot of women-led movies that are written by men, that where there's like, and now I had that feeling at first too, and it's almost, I think, this thing that happens where like it's like we're gonna just save this for later because we're going to focus on this character because they're our lead character. And now we'll hear from that other character at the end. But I also similarly was like, I don't want to hear, like, I don't care what Wayman feels, you know, but then.
Damn.
I know.
No, but what? Like, but yeah.
I like Wayman.
No, I love Wayman. Wayman's great. but you know what I mean? Like, I think like it's because it's like, we have this thing that happens at the end where it's like, it's almost like he's about to teach her something. Where we start to feel like we don't need the interjection of this. We don't need the interjection of this voice.
I don't know, man. Okay.
Again, I don't think that's what the movie did. I'm saying I had that feeling at first when it started. That's not what I'm not saying that the movie
to me,
did this.
To me, he wasn't trying to teach her anything. He was saying exactly how he felt. Like, he was talking about his own feelings. She was trying to be like, I'm better than you. And like, my life is better without you. And I, like, the biggest mistake of my life was marrying you, because I would have been stuck in a freaking laundromat, whatever. And then I thought it was a really beautiful line, him saying like, you know, if all our lives together were like just being in a, like taking care of a laundromat in like a crowded apartment, like that would have been enough for me.
But the problem with that is that was his dream though. Like, to me, that's the issue. Like, the issue.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That's his, he's not saying, you're projecting her. He's not saying he's a better person.
Wait, can I add my thoughts to this? I have thoughts because I this is so interesting to me because there's like so many layers to it's like the man, the woman, but also like the dad, the mom. Like I'm seeing more in it. I think that this is really interesting because I'm like, oh, how would I feel? Like, now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh yeah, that is annoying that the guy does that. But that isn't how I felt it, because I felt it as like, this is, I think, I was seeing it as almost like, this is the truth. Like, she would be doing better because the where she came from didn't set her up to be anything more than a wife. And so if she had gone off on her own, she would have been doing better. But what I thought was interesting was, even in that life, the thing she wants the most is him. But she just wanted to get it first, all the stuff she wanted. And what he wanted the most was her to love him. And so he didn't get that in that version. So in the version she gets everything she wants, he doesn't get what he wants because she doesn't love him. Like, she just wants to hook up with him. And in the version he gets everything he wants, like, he's the alpha, she dies. But I think that, to me, it's almost like a yin yang, like, not to like, but bring up like the corny yin yang, but more like the sort of, you know, the chi yin yang, because it's feminine masculine energy. And it feels like, to truly be in harmony, you have to acknowledge that they're separate beings. Like, in the yin energy and the yang energy are separate, but there's a little bit of yin and yang, and there's a little bit of yang and yin. And that made me okay with it, because it felt like the fact that she killed him and her power is fighting, I feel like he, that was his truth. Like, he wanted her to love him and she loved him by killing him. Like, there's no version where he was betrayed. He was like, this is you and you did it and you fully gave me everything and you destroyed me and that's what I want. Like, I don't know. It almost felt like there's no way for them to meet and destroy each other because they both exist no matter who, you know, they're like the ultimate, you know, Adam, Eve, yin yang, whatever. That's how I felt. But I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much.
No, I agree with that. I don't feel like we got it until the end, though. Like, to me, it's like, I, throughout the movie, you saw that she was doing a lot. You saw that, like, even before the craziness happens, she even brings up then that she came and followed him and gave up everything. Like, you hear that, but yet we see the sympathy for him. And to me, she physically... what you're saying, Teresa, makes sense to me. But to me, that moment doesn't connect until she is standing there and he's in front of her and like the fucking goons are back there and she has a chance to literally speak her piece as well. Because I've heard him say this throughout the whole movie. Like, I know how he feels. Like, I genuinely know. I heard him say it in the first scene. I heard him say it like at the IRS. I heard him say it in the car, in the van thing. I heard him say it in a suit. But she hadn't had the moment to realize her power, who she was, and to accept him and her life. Like, it was like she had given up, but she didn't accept it. And so I was like, I'm cool with it. I'm just happy that we really had that moment of her acknowledging her space as well. That's all I'm saying. Like, yeah. We got it.
And also, let me be clear. I loved this part of the movie. And I was what I was trying to address was, like, why does this come up for us? Because it came up for me now two movies in a row. It came up for Jarrah, right? Like, why do we even immediately have this aversion to these parts of these movies? And I don't know. It's a weird thing that I don't know where it comes from. I don't know why it's inherent in there. I think it might be some of those things that I was talking about, but like, I love two things. One, I love that he says, you know, in another life, I would have wanted to be with you. That's another sort of underscoring of the power of love in this. But then the other thing that I love too is that, like, he was also successful in the ways that, like, in these other ways, like, he's there, he's at this premiere, he's in that tux, he's blah, blah, blah. We don't know what he's done, but he is successful by these certain standards as well. But he doesn't want that. He wants this other thing. I thought that was really great.
Or he wants everything he has. I think that you get the picture that he's still very happy in his life, but he's not pining for her like he let it destroy his life. Like,
he right. But it's the fact that he says in another life. It fully underscores it in a really nice way. Like, in another life, I would have loved that. It's amazing.
Do you think there's a version, or do you think it's possible that because he is almost like, he starts from accepting the truth and that's why he can just do whatever? Because even if the truth sucks, which it does in some of the lives, he still is like, well, I'll do this. And then she starts from a place where she accepts the truth, but the truth sucks for her even more. Like, the realities are different. Like, she doesn't have the same opportunities he does when she marries him. And that's why their daughter, Joy, is like, can't face the truth.
But maybe that's what the whole party at the laundromat's supposed to symbolize, is that she isn't accepting her life where it's at. Like, she wants it to be something that it's not. She wants her daughter to be something that she's not.
But I think she's accepting the truth and saying, this sucks. I think she's like, this is the truth and it sucks. And it shouldn't, why is it so hard for me to get out of this? It's not me really. Like, even though in the beginning they were like, you made all these bad choices. She's like, yeah, but like, let's say if Wayman was in her position, I don't know that he would, I don't know. Like, I think maybe I'm reading too much into it.
I don't know if he would sacrifice. No, but I think that's the question. I don't know if the roles were reversed, and maybe it is like a patriarchy thing. It was like, I don't know if the roles were reversed, he would have sacrificed so much. Because in the case of the rich version of them, she went off. He didn't stay. You know what I'm saying? It's different. Like, it's not like he stayed while she went off to be a famous person. He was like, well, fuck it, I'ma still go. Cause he had his own dream. At no point did he sacrifice a thing.
Wait, wasn't it her? Wasn't it him?
No, so that's what I'm saying. But that's my point, is like, if they had a road and it was like, either you come with me or I can stay here and like whatever she needs to do, there was no point of him making a sacrifice, and I don't believe he would have.
Oh, like, I'll stay here.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think he would have either. But I don't think he needed to. I think that it's showing you the life path. Like, let's say, okay, like, literally breaking it down in electrons, right? Like, light and dark. Like, if it's like in the yin yang, it's like one is masculine energy, yang is like sun, and then yin is like night. I feel like she captures the night, because if you're in the darkness and you want to, and you're in love with the light, you want both to exist. But in order to hold your ground and have that relationship, you need to stay in the dark. Like, so she's almost like, I will accept light on my edge, but I'm going to hold the dark for people who need the darkness. And he's like, I'm going to spread light everywhere. But if he spread light everywhere and destroyed her, he would not have what he wanted, which is to have darkness. So both of them need, like, she needs to stand her ground and like, and defend, and he needs to stand his ground and expand. And that's why I think Joy can't like fathom the truth, because when she looks into the truth, it's conflicting, because she's a little bit of both, and she can choose to be nothing or everything. And that's why I think at the end she just is like, well, whatever, I'll just be something, right? Because if you can be everything and nothing, it's like, well, just pick one. But not even, you don't have to disappear or be everything, just pick one thing and then do that. And then
I loved Jess Eleanor's journey, that's her name, right? Yeah, the daughter's journey, because she literally goes from a person.
Who?
Do you mean Joy?
Wait, Joy?
Is
Joy?
Or no?
Joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry.
Also, did we say that Sunita is in this movie?
Yeah, you did.
Hot dog hands, yeah.
You did. The hot dog hands, which is insane. It's insane. That whole sequence.
The mustard, the ketchup. That was gross.
I want the feature film Hot Dog Hands. I mean, this is like the Carol that should have been, you know? Like, it's like, wait, did you guys, okay, because my boyfriend didn't get that reference. I was like, oh my god, I love the whole like hot dog hands trope of like that they took the like, you know, lesbian romance drama and made it hot dog hands. And then he was like, oh, that went over my head, I just thought it was a weird thing. So I'm curious what you guys felt when you saw that.
I just thought it was hot dog hands.
Wait, are you just talking about the scenes with
no, sorry, I'm not talking about the dancers. I'm talking about the hot dog hands, like where she's like crying and playing piano, and I feel like they're just playing off of the trope of like, you know, SNL did a sketch about it with K-Stew, and like where she's like the Totinos, which might be a better touchstone for the male audiences out there. I just feel like that's like a very common movie you watch, like the, you know, the lesbian middle-aged woman who finds like her like sexuality with I love that they did it with hot dog hands.
Like all that was great. I also loved when we finally got to like, so I know we've been skipping around, but the moment I truly loved is when Joy, whatever the bad guy's name is, I keep messing it up now purposely thinking about that movie. But when she finally gets to Evelyn and we kind of just have this, the story is just the two of them just in different universes. And I fucking loved when Joy's taken around and they become rocks and they're just chilling at the edge of the universe.
It's one of my favorite scenes for sure. It's nice to be at rock.
And it was just like the calmness of it. And then, you know, even later on when the mom is trying to get to her and like the rocks are like slowly moving.
Yo, when the rock, when the caption came up, I'm gonna get you, and the rock just starts shuffling over.
It was something that so
was
beautiful,
too much.
Man.
I was done.
It was beautiful. Like,
she had the little googly eyes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
Come on, Rock.
And we established that she hates the googly eyes like at the beginning. I told you, take this off of this. Man, I thought that was gorgeous. I guess I'm going to say one more favorite scene because it's random.
Raccoonie.
Dog, the raccoonie. When we saw it, when we physically saw the raccoon on his head.
And then the raccoon is like, she's seen too much killer.
The raccoon makes him pick up a freaking
something. Yeah.
But then when he's heartbroken over that raccoon, I was like, because you know what? Again, like I think what Braylock is getting at is like the love aspect of this movie was so deep, where it was like it was the love of yourself, love of other people. Because like he talks like that cook Henry talks about how much he loved the raccoon, because the raccoon, when they're on the curb, he's like, the raccoon, you know, understood him, helped him, and it was like, it was a big deal. Like that raccoon was, he was like his only friend, you know what I mean? And then we get that wonderful shot of him on her shoulders, which is insanity. I was like, this is insane.
Physical comedy of all of it, it's so well choreographed. Like the pinkies, every, like the paper cut, I forgot about that, like I couldn't look, but it was so like well done, because it gets you into that. It's like so funny, but it's enough cringe as like a saw, you know, but like it makes you feel that, but you don't have to rely on like the, you know, like whatever, just commonly done tropes. Cause it's like, it just feels like everything was fresh. Like they were like, okay, we need to do something that's hard and scary and painful, but like by paper cut. And oh my God, I'm even like feeling like bad talking about it. Like my hands. I'm
How
like,
dare they make us watch him?
I literally got a paper cut recently.
Oh, it must be painful. And it was like three of them. I was like, no. I mean, again,
I literally didn't watch. I closed my eyes.
I was like, they're not going to show this. And they did. They showed. They were like, and they had the sound effects. I was like, you better stop.
They
this.
Show him trying to do. He tries for it's 2 minutes. It's two, maybe 3 minutes.
And then when he gets to the third one, he's like, ah. Oh. Damn it. Like, and it's painful. Like, he's like, ah, this sucks.
But that's good storytelling. Cause even you're saying that now, and I'm like, ah, like, stop.
I love the explanation of the nothingness bagel where, like, we don't know what is in there. We don't know what will happen. But it was something about, like, it was something about this girl who the universe thinks is like evil and bad, who was pushed by her mom too much and snapped. But at the end of the day, this daughter could have went through that bagel or whatever decades, however long she's been alive and like been everything oilless, but she didn't want to do it alone. And at the end of the day, she went scouring the universe to find her mom who could just go through it with her. And it was like, it was something that was like so beautiful just about that thought, even though clearly we didn't know what the bagel was going to do. We didn't know anything about it. But the fact that this person was kind of given up, but just wanted her mom still by her side at the end of the day.
And the hope that she would see something different. Like when her mom didn't see anything differently, that was when she was like, oh, that's it. That I'm done. But like I'm the only one who sees this. Maybe someone else will see something else. Yeah.
I was going to say, okay, I have a theory about it that I thought was like obvious to me only because I feel like I've been in weird high end imagery world, but I'm curious if this is like a stretch for y'all or if it's like a maybe that she's being born at the end, because the imagery when she was like being sucked in and she pulls her out, it feels like she's coming out of the birth canal. And whenever I think about how we like the idea of going being born, it's like you're supposed to be like, oh, it's joy, life, like chi literally, but it's also like the most painful moment of that moment of your life that up to then, because right before that you're like in a safe womb, like you can kind of feel, you know, like obviously like we count our lives from when we remember, but in that moment as a baby you come out crying and you're like rah! Like everything, you can't breathe, you're hungry, and you like fucking hate everything, and you were in the dark and that was comfortable, and then you're in the light and light sucks. But now we don't like the dark and we want the light, and to me the black hole is taking all light, so on the other end of it it might actually be light. I don't know, is that a stretch?
Are you saying that she is born again?
No, maybe. Well, I think it was a metaphor for the like her wanting to her mom to understand. Like she literally was like, "You don't understand what it's like to be born out of you. Like you don't connect to me as being part of you." And so I feel like I'm like an orphan almost. Like, and then that's why when she does the finger thing, I thought it was going to be a stupid joke, but it was like a vagina,
and I thought
right?
It was starting as a joke, and she made like a reference to her mom's like low key homophobia, and then shows her like the hand thing that just looks like a vagina. But yeah, it's so much deeper once we get into the vagina hand.
It's yeah, so much deeper.
Deeper. I don't know the appropriate way to say it, but so much, once you get so deeper, much deeper into
that was the most appropriate way, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't see it that I didn't see it as her being born at the end, but I do certainly feel like, yeah, like there, like I think that's I don't think that's a stretch. Because there's certainly rebirths happening at the end there, right? Like there's so like at, there's at least two characters that are, while they're, even though they are who they were at the beginning of the movie, they are like they're reborn, they're embracing new things about their life that they had given up on, you know.
See, I was thinking about, I guess, like, I don't know why, I guess I was thinking a little bit about depression, and I was also thinking about the fact that, you know, because I was like, why did they have it so that she was like, she gives this whole speech about love, and then, you know, Joy's character gives this whole speech about like, you just have to like let me go, like let me make my own decisions, you know, let me make my own choice. And so she was like, okay, I'm going to. And like in all the different versions, we see her letting her make her own choice. And she's falling into this, she's falling into a hole. The Rock is literally falling down a cliff. You know, Rakakuni is getting away. You know, freaking the hot dog Jamie Lee Curtis is leaving. Like, it's like all this stuff of like, it's not, it actually is not working out. And hey, you know, just sometimes it doesn't work out kind of thing. And then she's like, actually, I got to fight for this, and I'm going to pull this back, and I'm going to be the Rock, and I'm going to tumble down the cliff with you, and I'm going to, you know, all this stuff. Go ahead. What were you saying, Teresa?
Sorry. No, okay. I'm too excited about this. That part I was bawling a lot because I don't know, whatever. For context, my little brother literally like committed suicide. And so I was like thinking about like, oh my God, like the idea of like, I was with you at first, like, what are they going to say? This is stupid. Like, don't be like, let me go, because like, that's dumb. But then I kind of feel like they redeemed it by the idea of like, it's not just love, it's trust. Cause it's her saying like, I don't know. And that's where the element of God comes in, I feel like, or like, you know, whatever your belief is, but that unknown and just trusting, right? Faith, sort of like, I love you and therefore I trust you. But at first I think she's like, I love you, but I don't trust you. And when she says, let me go, she literally is like, I don't think it's going to work out. But it's like, you just have to trust. And then she trusts and it does work out for both of them, but it doesn't work out right away. And I think that's what I got from it, but it is hard to know because I don't want to go.
But she had to make an action.
You should let all your suicidal friends die. You know, don't do that. But like, it's like hard to, yeah.
But I was like, to your point, it was like, she was like, I do, I have to trust. And then when she was seeing that, like, no, actually, like, I can't just let you, I'm actually not going to just fully let you go. Like, I'm going to let you make your own choice. But then if you're falling into the abyss, I'm pulling you out. Like, I'm not like, I'll let you make that choice, but I'm not going to leave you. I'm not going to leave you, you know?
But I don't know. Let her go first. I feel like that's important.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like,
of course,
she trusted herself, not her. Like, it's so weird because it's like, I feel like it's like an ego death almost. And this is where I feel like I lose everyone. But like the idea of like, she can't just say, I want you to live because I care about you. She has to be like, I want you to have everything you want and I don't see what you see, but if this is what you want. And trust that actually there's a higher power that will actually bring her back. But she can't do it because she thinks that's going to happen. So I feel like that when she pulls her back, it's because she actually changed when she let her go. And that's what gave her the strength to pull her back.
Wait, who,
like,
changed?
Before she
Joyce
was just,
changed?
Michelle, no, Evelyn. I think before, Evelyn was thinking like, I need my daughter because this is a reflection of me as a mother if I lose you. And then when she let her go, she was trusting that, like, letting her be born, like trusting her autonomy to make this choice, even if it's a mistake. But that moment led Evelyn to see the truth, which is why she reached out. Like, she didn't reach out until she saw all the truth in the flashbacks. But I don't know, like, it's really like, this is why I'm like, indie films I like, but they never do well in Hollywood.
It's a little messy. Like, well, and I do think part of that end, because I like, there's a part of me that I thought I kind of understood what they were going for. And I was like, it's also not necessary. I get not wanting your film to be super clean. But also, there's a reason that things are super clean in storytelling. And it's because, like, you know, it's just more effective in that way of like, doing the like, I'm going to save you. No, I'll let you go. And then I'm pulling you back again. But no, we still got some nice moment. I don't know. It was interesting. I just wanted to talk about it for a little bit. Cause I thought, I don't know, I guess it was to me, I was thinking as somebody, you know, like who isn't, you know, close relationships with people who have those kinds of, who get in really dark places, you know, there is, it's that weird, for me, it's like that weird element of like, how much do I give space for that person to, you know, instead of like, and listen, and then how much do I go like, I'm not, you're also not in a sane place and I'm not just going to let you do anything or I'm going to do what I can to show you that I'm here. You know, even if I'm not trying to be super controlling, I also need you to know that I am here and I still care, you know? So it's a weird balance. I don't know.
Yeah, it is tough. The gong gong part did bother me a bit but I think maybe it was truthful, but she just accepted her. Like, he didn't go through any change in the real, when they're like, oh, like, I felt like the mom being like, she's a girlfriend. And then he just immediately was like, cool. Like, that was like, oh, like, so she really didn't, I don't know. That part was like, but.
Well, I think they were, It was unrealistic, but I do think they were trying to show that, like, the mom was being very controlling and wasn't allowing for those things to happen. That's why my thing was that I actually don't think she was accepting the place that she was at in her life. It was like she was still trying to control it in a certain way, and it was like, just let it be, and then maybe things will work out, and also maybe things won't work out.
That is an interesting the idea of, like, grandpa, because I feel like that with my grandparents, like, there's so much with my parents that I've you know, obviously come to accept they did their best, but when I was younger, a lot of resentment for how they handled things. But with my grandparents, it wasn't like that, and I feel that they feel that way about their parents. And so I think that's a common theme in a lot of, like, Asian American culture, is like the grandparents do learn, and that they come back and then they try to redo it with their grandkids, and then that breeds more resentment with the parents, because they're like, what the fuck, like, I didn't get this version of my mom. And so that was interesting to see, like, instead of trying to just not be like her dad, she should just try to be like herself and let her daughter be herself, because it's not about undoing the mistakes, it's about just, like, learning the lesson earlier.
It's about breaking those generational curses, man. I mean, you know, it's hard. I think this last half was beautiful. I think, like, the whole fights with the hugs and then jumping back and forth. I agree with Bray. I do think they could have ended this movie a few times, but there is something to, if you're going to have a movie set in all these universes, and we've seen enough of these universes where I'm like, I guess you kind of got to close them all out. You know, it's like, They literally close out all of it.
There was a part of me that was like, I was like, I don't know if I need the end of Rat-a-Cooney, but sure. I was like, we've hit that well maybe at least one
every
too many
time
times.
They went back to Rat-a-Cooney, I was like, this is the greatest
thing
I've
done in cinema. Of the raccoon?
It was all four James.
It's not even listed.
That's a great question.
It's not even listed who that voice is.
It was too long. I don't think, part of me wants to believe that wasn't the writer director's choice, that was like the movie studio being like, I don't get the end, because, like, that feels like a note that they'd be like, we need to tie up. So that's why they end with, like, you can be anything you want, because I wanted it to end when she, like, killed Wayman, because it's like, we know, we've been on the journey, life doesn't have to be like, and that's why love conquers all, like it did, because he didn't die unhappy, he did die, but everyone dies. Like, I want him to just die by her hand and be like, cool, like, you died in my other version, so now I'm dead and now I'm with you, like the dead version. I don't know, like, but, you know, whatever. I didn't make the movie and I like it, and so it's fine. I guess I don't like things that end happy, because I haven't seen the end of my life yet, so I'm not sure how it'll end.
No, that makes sense. But I, you know, I don't even know what else to say about this movie. It was kind of just like, again, I would love to know, because I'm looking at it, the Russo brothers produced this, and it was like, I'm reading that. So Michelle Yao agreed to do it, because by that point, by the time she got the script, the Russo brothers were on board, and Awkwafina was cast as the daughter. So she jumped on board. And I can't tell whether or not, like, I can't tell who picked up the movie first. Was it A24 or the Russos? And again, the Daniels, you're right, because I think they did, what's that? What's the little farting? The one with Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe? Swiss Army Man. They did Swiss Army Man. So that was their first big movie. But no, man. I mean, Hollywood, good, great. Like, great. Show me more people of color doing weird shit. Like, I'm here for it. Like, it's oh my gosh.
How was it pitched? I'm so curious, because there's no way it was pitched like this. I just know that because I, you know, knowing that things go in and out. And I'm curious, like, how much of the original, like, where the, what part of it was the kernel, you know?
Like, well, apparently, I'm curious. Apparently, like, when they were pitching it, like, you weren't allowed to leave the office to get this, like, to read the scripts. They made you come. Like, they didn't send out any electronic versions of the script. They only had paper copies you had to read in the office. But from what I've read with the Daniels, they said they started writing it. And it seems like they weren't even finished writing it before they sold it. Because they said they were still going through it.
Well, they already made Swiss Army Man, so.
With certain pages, but then they were saying, like, as they were getting closer and closer, that's when the movie, like, solidified itself. I just don't know, like, yeah.
That's cool. Well, here's what I would have liked to have happened, okay? Because this is what I would like to have, because, you know, because it's like Joy's what's her name? What's the villain's name? Hold on, I was reading it. Jobu Tupaki, okay? She's there, and you know, she's causing all kinds of havoc, okay? And we don't know how we're gonna stop her. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, we hear, "You better back up, Jobu Chewbacca." And then we hear, No, seriously, you better back off, Jobu Schumacher. And then we hear one more voice being like, you better back off, Jobu Shabalaba Ding Dong. And then pan over, and we got steel, and he's all steel. And then we got bronze, he's covered in all bronze, okay? And then we also got gold, and he's covered in all gold. And it's John, Shaq. John, it looked like Shaq. Ray, it's just different versions of Shaq.
Ray,
throughout the multiverse.
No, Ray.
And one of the versions is gold?
It's steel, bronze, and gold. It's all of them. They all dressed up.
I would have gave one platinum. John,
I was going to do platinum.
Why did you say that's all of them?
No, it's just, it's all of, it's, yeah, it's, that is all of them. It's just,
is one all of them? Just what? Like gold, like he has no mask. Yeah,
he's fully gold. He has no. He's all gold. Okay.
I'm so lost.
Yeah, no, but then, and then it's it, no, it's all the versions
John,
of steel throughout the timeline.
The cause, please, sir. The cause.
Okay.
And
John, yeah, he's still the cause. No, no, the cause.
And then they all, one of them has a hammer, okay? But then the other one,
John,
the other one doesn't
have
a hammer. That one, bronze one has like one of those like, you know, one of those like electric drills, okay? Has like an electric drill, okay?
Are we still doing this?
Yeah. The movie.
And then gold, that. Okay? Gold has one of those things. You know those things when you like trying
to. So this is the cause, okay?
Grade.
We rate movies. We rate.
No, what is it?
He has one of those things when you're like grading the cut of diamonds. He has one of those eye.
Melissa.
Things. He puts over his
mute
eyes.
Mute his mic, Melissa.
Oh, that's what I waited for.
Don't you dare be disappointed.
I waited that
Don't
whole
you
time
dare.
For. One of those things that grades yeah. the cuts
That's
of
what he has,
diamonds?
Okay? And so then they're all there.
Oh, what a
What did you think?
No, we no, might, no. Now it's over. Now it's over. Now it's over.
Mediocre version of this yeah. podcast right now. So.
All right. Yeah, this is the worst version of the
podcast. I like it. That's the movie I want to see.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, now you ready, Bray?
We rate review films not based on how much we like them, but whether or not they help the cause of more leading Black actors in Hollywood. If we feel like the film fully helps the cause, we give it a black fist. If it's someone helps the cause, we give it a white palm. And if we feel like it doesn't help the cause at all, we don't give it anything. Leading actors of colors and for this. So on the count of three, we'll raise our ratings for Everything Everywhere All at Once, right?
Yes.
It's up.
Yes, man. James, you got to wait till he counts.
Mine is up.
Three. All right. Who knows what James is going to give? Three, two, one.
Boom, that is.
Oh, I guess I should, in the spirit of it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go. There you go. There you go. Got some hot dog hands.
Listen, even in the universe where we have hot dog hands, we learn to use our feet.
Which would happen.
Oh, my God.
Beautiful.
I mean, I don't even know what else you can say about this movie. I feel like the fact that we're talking about it, and we've talked about this movie for, like, quite some time, and people are hyping it, it feels good to see. I don't know. I think it's cool this movie just exists. I hope people go see it. Like, that's my big thing. I feel like it can do a lot of good. I just hope people actually see it. And it's not just like one of those, like, you know, Hollywood-y movies that people like. I think people should enjoy it. But, you know.
Yeah, one of the steals is all emerald.
All right.
One of the steals is all emerald.
Okay.
And he's riding on the multicolored rainbow horse from the Wizard of Oz.
But you guys don't tell people what you rated it? Because you just did it.
I did two.
Leaf.
It's
There's
two
no
black fists for me.
To...
Oh, that's right. Four black fists. You're right.
So
you're right. Four
dark...
black fists. I'm sorry.
I have
four
no
black.
Idea.
Four. Sorry. It's four black fists and a foot. Four black fists and a foot.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad I'm on it because then I was able to watch it last night. And I probably would have watched it, but I would have postponed it for a while. So
no, thanks for coming.
I feel
you. A good reason to watch it.
Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. Is there anything that you want to plug? Can people find you on social media or any shows coming up or anything like that?
Sure. If you like me, you should come watch me on tour. I'm going on tour from the 19th of April to May 3rd. I'll be starting in Chicago, driving down to Atlanta. You can see all the like shows, teresaleecomedy.com/shows, or follow me at Teresa Lee Bot on Instagram. If you didn't like me, that's fine. You're not alone. But don't come to my shows and talk to me.
You're not alone. That's hilarious.
There's no way they couldn't like you. Thank you so much. Yeah, you can follow us at Black Men Podcast. BlackMenPodcast.com is our website. We have a Indiegogo right now for The Threshold, a comedic short film we're trying to make about three black men on vacation who realize that the house they're staying in is killing white women. It's a weird comedy horror. And it's not, don't worry, it is funny. I've had my mom be like, I don't know about this. I'm like, don't worry, mom. No white women were harmed in the making of this film. So anyway, yeah, you could.
Oh, no,
it's so funny. Because someone was like,
the link is.
Someone was like, should you say you're killing white women? I was like, no, but no one, they're not dead. Like, it's you got to watch it.
But it's so funny your mom said that, Bray.
Yeah, but anyway, you can find the link at blackmenpockets.com, which is our website. We also have links to merchandise there that we sell via TeePublic. You can get yourself a t-shirt or an iPhone case or a pillow or something like that. And we also have a defunct Patreon. We don't do new episodes anymore, but if you subscribe, you can listen to the year's worth of episodes we put on there and then unsubscribe when you've listened to all of them because there will be no new ones.
One of the steals is covered head to toe in ruby. Red to head to toe in
John,
rubies.
John, keep going. John, keep going.
Oh, my Lord. Keep going. Okay, this is, if you rate and review us on iTunes, we'll give you five stars. We'll read your review on the air. This is by Classy Pac-Man. Says, love this show. I've loved this show for years. My wife and I listen for every movie we've seen. We've been listening to John, Jara, and James for so long that we keep forgetting we've never actually met them. We say things to each other like, did you see our friends got a Netflix show? Or our friend is getting married. black comic with a film degree in this show makes me feel seen in the most specific way possible. The film criticism is sharp and witty and fun, and it's great to hear three black men connect with each other out of a clear amount of love and respect. I don't know how clear it is.
I think it's a super clear love.
No, I'm scared. Movie request: The Associate with Whoopi Goldberg. Hilarious movie where Whoopi is a stockbroker who pretends to be a white man to get business. She even goes as far as wearing prosthetics. Predates Mrs. Doubtfire and has better social commentary. P.S. Thank you for giving Leon his flowers. Of course.
Oh, we love Leon.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.
Peace.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production, produced by Melissa D. Montz. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Forever Dog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.
Forever Dog.
What's up, Black Men Can't Jump comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!